to Resettled Radio, brought to you by the ARCC, live on Planet FM.
Stay tuned for current affairs, conversation, interviews, music and more,
as we explore the perspectives and stories from resettled communities
and bring you information from within the resettlement sector.
Welcome to Reset Radio, brought to you by ARCC on Planet FM 104.6. And today we have pre-recorded some of the amazing stories, so we want to keep you, enjoying.
Yeah.
And some of them are so good, and I hope you will learn something new from those stories. We have heaps of them, and if you like them, let us know. We will play more.
Yep, they're great stories, so hope you enjoy them.
I was born in Eritrea. My family moved to a camp in Ethiopia and stayed there for nearly 2 years. I came to New Zealand together with my family at a young age at the end of 2003. First we went to Mangere, and from there we moved to Henderson and lived there for almost 5 years. I was 10 at the time. I went to Ranui Primary School for 2 years. I needed a special status in primary school. In New Zealand primary school, you should leave primary when you are between 11 to 12 years old, but because I didn't speak English and I didn't know how to read and write, my teacher advised that I should stay for one more year to improve my English. My teacher helped me with all the foundations that I needed to enter intermediate. I stayed only 1 year behind because I was getting older, and people in New Zealand ask, "How old are you?" And when you tell them, they start teasing you. I wrote a letter to the principal explaining my situation and why I wanted to move to year 8. She approved my request. In 2008, I finished Henderson Intermediate and moved to Waitakere College, where I studied there until year 10. I was very interested in studying, so I used to work hard and try to improve my English. I didn't go to school back home. I started learning the basics here, from ABC to science and maths. By the time I went to high school, I still had difficulties in English, but I knew the basics of math. I used to read the children's books just to improve my English. ESOL classes also helped. I had that one-to-one help. That was really good because they helped students with writing, spelling, verbs, nouns, pronouns, and other parts of speech. Those are the basics of the English language that one needs to learn. It was hard for me, as I didn't know the English language and didn't learn it from a young age. My English improved through school. I received second place for the top class, top scholar award in 10th grade. I got almost 5 awards within a 2-year period. I was also given a special book only awarded to hard-working students. I was very happy for my achievements in school. In year 11, I moved to a different school, and that year was difficult for me. I had a lot of family problems. In the middle of such problems, I still had an interest for studying, but because there was a lot going on with my life, I struggled with classes. I still got prizes for schoolwork, but it was a very challenging time for me. When we first came from Mangere, we got our own home and started going to primary school. It was different for us because all the students remained seated when the teacher entered the classroom. My culture had made me believe that students here needed disciplinary action because they acted differently from the way I was raised to think a student should behave in a classroom. We asked ourselves, what are they doing? In our country, students sit at the table, and when the teacher comes into the classroom, they stand up as a sign of respect. It's different in New Zealand. Students were all white people. We thought we looked different. I remember this girl. She was so beautiful, sitting next to me, playing with her braided hair. I couldn't stop looking at her, wondering why she was playing with her braids. Some people have someone who inspires them. I have one too. My primary school teacher has inspired me in many ways. I will never forget her. She knew that I had English language deficiencies, so every time we were on break, she would tell her daughter and her friends to teach me things that I needed to know. She wanted me to achieve more, so she gave me all the help that I needed. She believed that I was a very bright student, and if I stayed back a year, I could improve and would be more confident and be able to achieve whatever I wanted. She trusted me, and I trusted her. After high school, I went to the Auckland University of Technology. I enjoyed studying health sciences there. I learned so many new things. I got to experience life as an adult and learn to deal with things on my own. My first preference was to get into medicine, but having English as second language is a struggle. I didn't get all the scores required, so I didn't get into medical school. I applied at Auckland University of Technology, and I went for the health science pathway. I chose health promotion psychology papers in my first year. When I compared the papers, I liked the psychology part better, because health promotion is more about promoting awareness, whereas psychology is studying the human behaviour in depth and how to implement interventions. I liked it because it connects me more with people. Also, it is similar to being a doctor. If I continue and do my master's, perhaps I may still get into medicine someday. I would like to work with youth. That's my wish. Some youth leave school at 16, so I need to promote the importance of education to them and its benefits in the long run. I want to work with youth or as a career advisor at a university because many students don't know what their options for courses will look like or what the requirements are when one is pursuing a course. One wrong step may ruin the whole process. I consider myself a lucky person to be in this country. There are so many beautiful things I like about it. First of all, New Zealand is peaceful and safe. It also provides more opportunities for immigrants. When I say more opportunities, I mean that I get a lot of support from different government sectors, education, healthcare, and housing. One gets student allowances and student loans to study at any university within New Zealand. The country has lots of opportunities for people who have the drive to go out there and do something with their lives. As a new immigrant in New Zealand, there are some things I dislike though. It is a small place, but the culture is different. Back home, your neighbours are like family. They say hello to you and you say hello to them every day, and they come to your house and you go to their house while sharing a lot of things. But here, you don't care who your next door neighbour is. Everyone is on his or her own way, sometimes without any greetings. That is the only thing I don't like about New Zealand. People need community. You need people's support. I know there is support. For example, if you go to church, that is where you can meet people and there are youth programs, but I do not think that is enough. You need a lot of support in your society from neighbours and friends. For people who have no family here, they have a very challenging and difficult time. There is this issue of speaking English. If you cannot speak the language, they will make you study English to make it better. But some people don't want to study because they never studied back home. To tell them to go and study English, their mind might not be in that position. They came here to live in a safe country first, and they want to find work. And I know it is beneficial to learn English, but also to find a part-time job. I know some immigrants from refugee backgrounds who go to school but want to depend on social welfare assistance, and that is not a good idea. It's fine to get government support, but it's important to try to find part-time work to support yourself while studying, because welfare assistance will not solve all your financial needs. Some people end up on social welfare financial support because they cannot find any jobs. They are made to depend on government support because they don't have a job. I think that is why people don't want to stay in New Zealand nowadays. There is racism, and a lot of people move to Australia to work there. There are more job opportunities in Australia than in New Zealand. Here, you find companies demanding experience for the simplest jobs that don't require any experience. My question is, how is a person entering the job force expected to have work experience? I say, give someone the work so they can show you their skills. According to the things I have experienced in New Zealand, I have advice for new settlers from refugee backgrounds. If you have children as young as 11 through 16, try to have an honest discussion with them about the importance of school. Students of these ages don't always take school seriously, but parents can give their moral support. They should use every opportunity that is given to them wisely. Such age groups don't easily listen, but try your best. It's not always easy to settle in a new country, but you can be fine if you are prepared for it. Let your children use the opportunity to study. The thing is that you get more opportunities and benefits after achieving a good quality education. Suppose you come from a poor country in which all you knew was war, hunger, diseases and other disasters, and you come here to abuse freedom and opportunities provided to you, are you doing something for yourself? That would be a waste of resources to bring you here. Ask yourself questions like, why did you come here? What can you do for yourself? What do you want to achieve? There are many reasons for different immigrants to come to New Zealand. Refugees come to New Zealand to be safe and live a happy life. New Zealand is a safe and peaceful country. Like I said earlier, some immigrants come here for different reasons. Whatever the reason is that brought you here, you should manage your time and use it wisely. Yes, you can still socialise, but you need to make time for upgrading your life. Have time periods for each activity you do. I really don't like it when people waste the time that should be spent on useful things. For the older people, don't just sit home doing nothing and complaining. Give your free time to communities by volunteering. Helping communities through volunteering doesn't require English language as a prerequisite, so get involved in volunteering programs. All you need is to find the right connections. Build on your previous experience and skills and knowledge to find whatever you want in your life. Everyone has something to offer. In New Zealand, you need to be brave to tackle lots of obstacles, challenges and difficulties to reach where you want to be. Whenever you complain about not having something in your life, there is a place and a time for that. Think, if I do this right now, what will be the consequences? All the people that I have met have different life experiences, different ways of living. They have suffered a lot in their lives, but in the end, they got to where they wanted. Don't think too much about people who are bothersome to you. They are a distraction. Just mind your own business and move on. Remember that patience, resilience, and perseverance do matter. My coming to New Zealand is a great success. From a young age back home, I used to live on a farm. It was a hard life. The purpose of moving to New Zealand is to live a peaceful life and get a quality education. There were a few times where life was tough for me, and I was tempted to quit school to find a job, earn money, and move back home. Because in my own interpretation, back home you have your own culture, your own people, and everyone would be around me. But the question is, would I be safe if I returned to my country of origin? I dropped the idea. When I was a little girl, I used to tell my dad that I don't want to live in the countryside. I always wanted to go to the city, get an education and become a doctor. I wanted to have an educated husband and I wanted to have a nice house. That is the only dream I had and I was given the opportunity to come here and get all that. Here in New Zealand, I am educated, I have the dream husband I wanted and I am currently working towards getting my dream home. Mission accomplished.
now with popcorn and Sprite. Walk home, fly away like kite.
For the longest while we're jamming in the party, and you're whining on me, pushing everything right back on top of me, yeah. But if you think you're gonna get away from me, you better change your mind. You're going home. You're going home with me tonight. Let me hold you, girl, caress my body. You got me going crazy. You turn me on, turn me on. Let me jam you, come right on around me. You got me going crazy. You turn me on, turn me on. La-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. Hug me, hug me, kiss me, kiss me. Hug me, hug me, kiss and caress me. Hug me, hug me, squeeze me, squeeze me. Hug me, girl, and kiss and caress me. Hey, hey, hey,
hey, oh, yeah. Well, yes, well, yes. It's a big dancehall song, you know. Lots of talents and every little. You know it is. You know we go.
I am from Ethiopia. I spent the years of my youth liberating my people in Ethiopia. I joined the Tigray People's Liberation Front, a mass rebellion movement established to overthrow the communist dictator, Colonel Mengistu Haile Mariam. Initially, Haile Mariam came into power in 1978 after overthrowing the emperor, Haile Selassie, in a bloody coup. After the coup, this communist dictator ruled Ethiopia with an iron fist. He used an autocratic military mechanism that he called Derg and the rest of the world called Red Terror. He committed genocide throughout his tenure in office. He also relied on the Soviet Union for economic plans, which yielded no favourable results. Eventually, Ethiopia was hit by terrible famine. As a result of his dictatorship, Tigray People's Liberation Front and other armed forces of Ethiopia formed an alliance. In May 1991, we were able to overthrow the communist dictator. After removal of the Derg, or Red Terror, regime, all of the armed forces, including Tigray People's Liberation Front, merged and formed a transitional government under the Ethiopian People's Revolutionary Democratic Front in an effort to restore democracy and the rule of law. I was honoured to serve in the transitional government under Ethiopian Prime Minister Meles Zenawi Aris. I was a big man, holding an influential position in Ethiopia, but I was not happy with the government that I served. This was because there were a lot of abuses of the rights we had fought for as a nation. There was no space to speak up. Although the new Prime Minister had made a lot of economic recovery within a short period of time, he failed to deliver democracy. He used to talk about fighting for democracy and civil rights, but there was only lip service. Eventually, my unhappiness with the new regime was noticed by the intelligence apparatus, and my basic rights were breached. In 1993, I decided to flee Ethiopia. Bearing in mind that the Ethiopian government was looking for me, I asked one of my relatives to accompany me to Eritrea to avoid suspicion along the way. We both dressed up and acted like farmers and set out to the northern region of Ethiopia. We walked for 4 horrible days to reach the nearest town in Eritrea. When we arrived, I went straight to the Dikembe military base, the largest military base in Eritrea, because I didn't know anybody. I was hoping that I could get a temporary permit that would allow me to stay legally in Eritrea. Luckily, I was able to obtain the temporary permit that I needed. I had to spend days without food because I didn't have any money to buy food. I had a gold necklace and a flashy citizen watch that I could sell, but nobody could buy them. This was because the trade law in Eritrea required that I must have a receipt for anything that I wanted to sell. Unfortunately, I had no receipt. People might have thought that I'd stolen them, so nobody wanted to buy my items. In the end, I became a hungry man in the streets of Asmara, the capital city of Eritrea. I also didn't have a place to sleep. I searched for a place to spend a night, but I couldn't find one. So I went to the nearest police station to spend the night in jail. The police officer in the night duty asked me, "What do you want?" "I want to spend a night in jail," I told him. "Why? Have you killed anybody?" the police officer asked. "No, I haven't committed any crime, sir. I'm new in town and I don't know anybody. I'm flat broke. I just want to spend a night here. I'll leave tomorrow morning, I replied. He noticed that I was very weak, so he opened the door for me. You'll sleep in a woman's cell. There are no female prisoners today, he replied, and directed me to the cell. I consented to the police officer and followed his directions. I slept on the bare, cold floor without a bed or blanket. It was an awful night. No one offered me a place to spend the night except the prison. This is an interesting world, I said to myself as I fell asleep. In the morning I woke up and thanked the police officer for his kindness, and then I disappeared into the streets. As soon as I stepped out of the prison, I met a shoeshiner. I have gold necklace and a flashy citizen watch with me, and I want to sell them cheap. Would you be interested, I asked. Oh, good, I want your watch. How much are you selling for? It looks expensive, the shoeshiner replied. 120 Ethiopian birr, but I don't have the receipts. Never mind about the receipts, the shoeshiner replied, and agreed to buy the flashy citizen watch. I'll give you 20 birr as a tip, I replied, after receiving the 100 birr from him. My life in Asmara was not good. I didn't feel well, and I even had a suicide plan. Eventually, I decided to look for help. I used the 80 birr out of my 100 birr to make a phone call to one of my relatives in Saudi Arabia, asking for immediate financial help. My relative immediately reacted to my situation and sent me 1,000 birr within a few minutes. I was overexcited. I felt like a millionaire. Happiness was written all over my face. My mission was to get out of Africa. By any means, I wanted to get out of Eritrea because I felt insecure. If Ethiopian authorities had ever found me, I would have been arrested or killed. I had to act quickly. I approached several embassies in Asmara to get a visa out of Eritrea. However, all of the embassies I contacted declined to provide me with a visa. It was only the Italian embassy that was willing to issue me a visa, but they wanted to charge me $3,000, and there's no way that I could possibly afford it. So my search for a visa failed terribly. I even went to the American consulate to seek help, but the rude American senior employee didn't want to talk to me. He also looked down on me. I asked him, "Can you help me find where to go to be helped as a refugee?" "Okay, this guy will take you to the place that deals with people like you. Just follow him," he replied, and instructed one of his guys on what to do. There I met Peter Cook, the general manager of the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees. I presented my case to him, a political refugee case. He listened to me and said, "I will first check your details in Ethiopia to make sure that you indeed ran away for political reasons." He took my details, including my job title, work address, home phone number and address. He wanted to verify whether I could be granted as a political asylum under United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees in Eritrea. A few days later, I was called to Peter Cook's office to be briefed about the facts he had found about me in Ethiopia. He said, "I agree with you that you have indeed escaped Ethiopia for political reasons, so I consent to provide you the protection you need." As of the 1st of January 1994, I became the first refugee in Eritrea. I was granted political asylum under the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees with available and valid reasons. At that time, Eritrea was the newest nation, and a United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees branch had just been established there. Peter Cook offered me a job, but I turned his offer down because I wasn't interested in working. I just wanted to get out of the vicinity of Ethiopia. It would take no time and energy for Ethiopian intelligence officers to find me in Eritrea. One time, two Ethiopian security operatives even tried to kidnap me in Eritrea's Port Massawa, and I was only able to survive with the help of my cousin. The people at the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees knew my life was at risk, so I was told to go to Sudan in a manner that resembled deportation. I had no choice but to accept to go to Khartoum, Sudan, for my own safety. This was after I'd been living in Eritrea for a year and a half. This had been a difficult time, for I was also dealing with the loss of my son, who had died back in Ethiopia. Life in Khartoum was a bit better than Eritrea. I got a job with an Irish non-governmental organisation in Khartoum to support myself. The United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees told me that my case was preferred for Australia. Several months had passed without hearing from Australia. After a long waiting period, I finally heard from the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees. It's so unfortunate that the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees in Sudan was so corrupted. You have to bribe the key United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees employees to get your file processed, said the officer. In 1997, I was offered a chance to resettle in Canada with three other political asylum colleagues. I satisfied all of their requirements. I met all the costs, including the medical checkup. I paid 600,000 Sudanese dollars, roughly equivalent to US $1,000. I was medically fit and everything was good. This application looked promising in every single way, but for unknown reasons, the case died. By that time, I felt like all of my doors were closed. I had heard that political refugee cases were processed urgently and that political asylum seekers usually got cleared for resettlement within a month by the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees. However, I spent 6 months staying in Sudan, and while waiting, I lost hope. Then unexpectedly, good luck knocked at my door. An interview with a woman for a chance to resettle in New Zealand. I was blown away with this great news. I didn't expect anything at this point in time. I got ready for the interview. This Kiwi woman who interviewed me was super polite. She felt sorry for me after hearing my story. Political asylum seekers do not have to wait 6 months without being given a chance to resettle. This category is always urgent, said the Kiwi woman. I finished the interview and she told me, you will be resettling in New Zealand. I was super excited. I spent most of that afternoon reading about New Zealand online because I'd never heard of this tiny, peaceful nation. The resettlement process was also expedited. I came to New Zealand in 2000. I stayed in the Mangere Refugee Resettlement Centre upon arrival. After 6 weeks, it was time to move into the communities. I wanted to live in Auckland, so I talked to Housing New Zealand. However, my request was declined because I was destined for Wellington. Regardless of the decision on the resettlement location, I didn't really like how the employees of Housing New Zealand treated me in processing my case. They were so rude, but I brushed off their rudeness. Luckily, two Kiwi friends took me to their house to stay with them. This was my first taste of kindness in New Zealand. I liked the country already. I stayed with these two friends in their house in Auckland for 2 years. Life in Auckland was crazy. It was a new way of life with terrible weather. It was hard to cope. Culture shock is a big thing that affects all immigrants, and I was no exception. Although I was lucky to be able to speak English, I had to pay extra attention when listening because people here speak very fast. Searching for a job is the main headache for newly arrived immigrants. I was a certified nurse back home, but I was told that my existing knowledge and skills wouldn't matter here, especially if I'd never worked in the field in New Zealand in the last 5 years. My nursing diploma was of no use unless I upgraded it, so I enrolled for a course and found a job in a supermarket. Through my supermarket job, I earned some money. Finally, after years on the run, I was able to support my wife, whom I'd left in Addis Ababa, the capital city of Ethiopia. I started a process of bringing my family to New Zealand through the family sponsorship program. In 2002, my family joined me in Auckland. I was very happy. I talked to Housing New Zealand again and asked them about accommodation. Surprisingly, they acted differently this time. They provided my family with a house and we stayed together as a family once again after 9 painful years apart. I'm currently a self-employed city taxi driver. Taxi driving is good and terrible at the same time. It's good in a way that you're your own boss, but it's terrible in a sense that you can get robbed and the police wouldn't respond to your calls as urgently as possible. Sometimes a passenger wouldn't pay me because of my race, and even when I've reported an incident, no actions have been taken. There's not much protection for people of colour in the taxi business. One time a drunken passenger vomited in my taxi but refused to clean it when I asked him to. I called the police, but when you don't talk like a Kiwi, they don't respond to your call quickly. There's a lot of racism in the taxi business, but that doesn't override my love for New Zealand. One good thing about New Zealand is that it provides a lot of democratic spaces. You can breathe out your frustration until your lungs are exhausted. In Africa, the police are viewed as an enemy of the communities, but in New Zealand, police are the best friends of the communities. The healthcare system here is superb. Most people are very polite, although you encounter some rude people like in Housing New Zealand. But people help you when you're in dire need. One time my expectant wife went into labour and called an ambulance. While she was hurrying to the hospital, she gave birth on the motorway. She got all the help she needed along the way. There are no such services in Ethiopia, Eritrea or Sudan. New Zealand is my home and my kids have a future here and they know it. I'll take this opportunity to thank Eritrea and Sudan for their hospitality and thank the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees for the care. And for those who want to immigrate to New Zealand, I'll say that this is a great country to live, but you have to come with a clear goal and program. As long as you respect the law, respect other people and know what you're doing, you'll be good. Some people start messing up on arrival because they don't know what they're looking for in life once they get to New Zealand. They expect everything here to be a bed of roses. Francesca Marciano couldn't have put it better when he said, "When you leave Africa, as the plane lifts, you feel that more than leaving a continent, you're leaving a state of mind. Whatever awaits you at the other end of your journey will be of a different order of existence. So be prepared."
Sida dabalik sur Tia, Yirkanu Dange Sani, Maritrebu, Kukalane Tia, Wadesitra Gubi, Amborata Naki, Kukalane Tia, Narafa Gatte, Siadun Kiyayo, Mada Nafe, Mada, Nafe, Mada Nafe, Aga, Dani, Mada Nafe, Tachab, Sena, Nafe, Nafe, Aninjuru ane, aninjuru yaga, aninjuru kukute na nate di. Tuwa tuwa yeti, kiro nalkani yaga, tuwa tuwa yeti, sindiro nalkani. Namagaran ane, mamu nalkani yaga, malanjira chachap se na nate di. Malanjira mana, kira malanjira yaga, malanjira chachap se na nate di. Aninjuru ane, aninjuru yaga, aninjuru kukute na nyate te. Kote kote nami, zanyi darbate yaga, kote kote nami, uchi zanyi darbate. Rafe mbulu nami, mahabgate yaga, malanjira chachap se.
Originally, I came to New Zealand from Sudan on the 20th of July, 2012. I had lived in a refugee camp in Chad for 8 years. I went there with my husband and 5 kids, 2 girls and 3 boys. After 6 years in the refugee camp, my husband passed away. After my husband's sudden death, my daughter and I became very ill. The 2 years following my husband's passing proved to be a very difficult time for me. And this is what led us to being referred to New Zealand as an emergency case for treatment. First, the good thing about New Zealand is the way the government treated us regarding our health problems. Secondly, the simple life provides us with hope to feel our happiness and live with our family together. What worries me in terms of challenges contributing to my life in New Zealand is first of all the language problem. I came to New Zealand without knowing any other people, and this provided a real challenge. I speak Arabic, so they bring Iraqi people to translate for me. But the dialect of Iraqi people and my accent do not match. I speak Arabic, so they bring Iraqi people to translate for me. But the dialect of Iraqi people and my accent do not match. Then there are letters from government agencies. For example, Work and Income New Zealand, WINS. Sometimes letters were sent by WINS requesting me to come to an appointment, but no one was able to read that letter for me and tell me the details, so my appointment would pass and my support would be cut. When I was able to go there, they would not back pay me for the payment period I missed. This made things very difficult because I am the sole person responsible for payments and I'm not working. I cannot get my head around how the health system works either. For example, my daughter was supposed to have an operation on her teeth, but she missed it because of language difficulties and misunderstandings. Being the only person who speaks my language in New Zealand has affected my life greatly. Sometimes there were things happening at my children's school, but I would be unable to come through for them. If they get bullied at school because they look different and they come home and complain about it, I don't have the ability to go and explain what my children are feeling to the school staff. I can't help them with their schoolwork at home either. Sometimes there is a family conference at the school. Since I will not be able to go there and listen to my children's reports, often my children will report themselves. I don't know what to do about it. Everything is stopping me from progressing. But in general, I'm fine and learning to cope with things. I really don't have enough knowledge to say what should be put in place to help me. In my specific case, it would help to have someone who could translate for me. If there was some kind of transitioning system or schooling for parents to make sure they understand what the system of education looks like, that would be great. There are times when my children translate for me, but I have doubts and my heart tells me that what has been relayed is not the complete picture of what has been said. It makes me feel very upset and powerless. I often think that if only there were some kind of proper transition for people on my level, because I guess you can place me as a high-needs person in terms of language and in terms of navigating the system. I've never been to school, but this should not stop me from being part of the society I need to be part of. If there was more help in terms of language, this is the most important thing that would make life better for me. Back home, I was amongst my extended family. Everyone was there during Idelada or other celebrations. I used to go and create an income to support my family. If you have money, you will be able to put your children in school. So comparatively with New Zealand, there is a difference. I acknowledge the government for giving me a house, for giving me benefit, and for my children going to school. But I remain in isolation. Back home, I stayed with extended family, where I could see love and happiness in all the social gatherings. Here in New Zealand, I get things that I didn't have back home, and what I had back home, I cannot find here. I hope that things will get better, and I will be able to drive to grocery stores and make bill payments on time. It is the basic stuff that matters, but these things are proving to be real challenges. I only pray that the future will be good for my children. I would like my daughter to get married and stay with us, and that our family will grow, and that my other children can go to school and achieve something good. I am hoping for my kids' future to be filled with beautiful things that I have never had in my life. For my older son, Izzedine, I hope he will finish school and go to university, graduate and find a job, and afterwards to go and get married back home and bring his new wife here. The education for my children is what I value most, so if they could go through university, get qualifications and find meaningful jobs, I won't have any other problems. I need to make sure that my grandchildren come from United Family. I need to make sure that my grandchildren come from united families. Most importantly, they need to contribute to New Zealand as a country, because this is the country that offers a fair shot in life. I value New Zealand's contribution to my family, and in return, future generations need to contribute back to New Zealand society. I love New Zealand more than any other country. One of the best things I love about New Zealand is freedom of speech. Here you can talk without fear of punishment. Everyone has security guarantees. People are protected by law, irrespective of religion, gender or age. Sometimes I remember bad things that happened in my life, and those are the times when I get scared, but I know I am safe here. Somebody serve to hold on.
I am Del Suen Singh Nalek from Myanmar. Myanmar is located in Southeast Asia, formerly known as Burma. Myanmar is bordered by India, Bangladesh, China, Laos, and Thailand. Yangon is the nation's capital. The Myanmar education system is dominated by the Burmese language. English is learned only as a subject in the schools. After completing high school, I obtained a Bachelor of Social Science degree through distance learning, but I couldn't communicate in English. My social science degree led me to my first job, a clerk, in Myit Chinai Court. The salary of a clerk was a mismatch for Myanmar's markets, far below US $50 per month. Because I couldn't live within my means as a clerk's job, I resigned. I got a managerial job in 1999. I was employed as a sector manager in Upcountry's construction company, based in Yangon. The managerial job didn't take away the financial burden that I had, but it outweighed the earnings from my previous job. The culture of the governing system in Myanmar criminalized fleeing the country as refugees. Relatives of the person who had fled are always subjected to punishment, especially if you just happen to be a government employee. My brother's refugee status in Malaysia affected us, as his relatives still live in Myanmar. There were times I would be called by authorities to record statements, giving them the assurances that I will not run away like my brother. They didn't stop there. They also monitored my movements, even scrutinized my trips between Yangon and the villages. There are no moral grounds for one to be punished because of a relative's wrongdoing. While in Malaysia, my brother was sponsored by the United Nations to move to New Zealand permanently. When my brother informed me that he could sponsor my wife and me to come and live with him in New Zealand, I was excited. I felt that a second chance had come to live a life free of dictatorship. Since my brother lived alone in New Zealand, he was allowed to sponsor a close relative under the Refugee Family Support category. This is allowed in order to avoid stress caused by loneliness. In 2011, my wife and I came to New Zealand under my brother's Refugee Family Support Category sponsorship. We didn't go to Mangere Refugee Resettlement Centre for accommodation because we were not refugees. I dream of a second chance to live a decent life and of making my own decisions without anybody's interference had materialised. Auckland is good, but not the best for a new arrival who doesn't speak English. The struggle to get a job was traumatising to me. Employers turned me down because of a breakdown in communication. All Work and Income New Zealand wanted to know is why I didn't have a job, but they were not concerned with the reasons behind not having a job. Sometimes Work and Income New Zealand doesn't consider how one's lack of English language is a blockade to employment. After enrolling to study basic English and further for foundations in 2012, my English improved and I got a job as a machine operator at New Zealand Health Manufacturing, a company that produces capsule medicines. Things began to pick up. When I completed a certificate in social services and a diploma in English language, the language barriers that blocked my way to employment disappeared. I managed to find job after job because my English could be understood and I was now capable of understanding employers. I learned several new techniques for job searching. I am currently a full-time student working towards a Bachelor of Social Work degree in Auckland. It is utterly sad when one comes to this great nation and they face discrimination instantly. The truth is that there is a lot of unfair treatment of people of colour in Work and Income New Zealand, as well as StudyLink and Housing New Zealand. Discrimination in such branches is done openly and with no disciplinary measures taken against the employees who entertain the practice. I walked into Work and Income New Zealand one time to apply for a house because it was time to get a place of my own. This woman who worked there dramatised my case by yelling at me in public, saying, "Don't you have a culture in Myanmar? How come a brother can kick you out? Blah, blah, blah." She couldn't stop shouting at the top of her lungs. Even though I told her the real situation was that my brother was not kicking me out, he had gotten married and they were expecting a baby soon. I was embarrassed. I was asking her to cool down her temper and talk to me as an adult, but she continued to yell at me in front of everybody. Still, life has been good since I came to New Zealand. When I came, I couldn't speak English, but now I am working towards a bachelor's degree in social work practice. Nothing is more amazing, and I am appreciative that New Zealand has given me a second chance to rebuild my life. I am enjoying lots of privileges that nobody could provide for me in Myanmar. New Zealand is my home. I am a community person. I am one of the founders of the Auckland Zomi Inkuan community, started 2 years ago, and we now have a well-structured Zomi Inkuan community in Auckland. I want to be a professional social worker and help communities. I don't want people to suffer the way I did when I first came here. If you are a new arrival to New Zealand, make sure you enroll in English classes and improve your English skills to obtain your goals. English is essential here to quickly adapt to New Zealand's multicultural environment. Nothing is ready and waiting for you. You have to be prepared and work hard to achieve your goals. Never miss a second chance in life. One can get financial help from the government, but it's more stressful being dependent. Get on your feet and be on your own.
True. gone too high, babe. Oh, I do believe that there's love you wanna share. Oh, oh, I'll take care of you, lady, and no fear. Oh, so I wanna know. From the bottom of my heart, it's true. Tell me what I gotta do to please you. Baby, anything you say, I'll do. 'Cause I only wanna make you happy. From the bottom of my heart, it's true.
That's the end of the stories, and these are the stories of resettlement journey, you know, coming to Aotearoa, New Zealand, starting a fresh life. And these are the Kiwis. So
yeah,
these are part of the Kiwi stories. So, yeah, I hope you have learned something new.
Yeah, and we will see you next time.
See
ya.
Bye.
Our show for this week.
Take care until next Saturday, same time, 10 to 5 on Planet FM 104.6
and on the web www.planetaudio.org.nz/resettledradio.